welcome back to the WrestleSpective podcast. I am Jason Mann, and we are back. It is February 2016. If you are listening to this then, this is a new episode. We've been uploading the old episodes for quite a while, back to getting the feedback in order, and now we have a brand new episode. Even if it's not February 16, if you've never heard this, it's brand new to you. It's basically the same deal. So my guest today, he is the host of the Pro Wrestling Super Show at Place to Be Nation, Stephen Graham. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I've been listening to this show for a long time, and I've really appreciated the old ones being put up. Got to listen to some that of my favorites and some that I missed, and I assumed something was happening when all these old ones were being uploaded, and I was kind of hoping that the show would come back. And well, here we are. I'm on it. So that's
yeah,
great.
You get first crack. So yeah, I've been wanting to talk about this feud for quite a long time, specifically the final singles match of the feud, which we'll get to sort of later on in the show. We're going to kind of go through the high points of this feud. It is Bret the Hitman Hart against Stone Cold Steve Austin, their 1996 through 1997 feud, with three major matches, at least three major singles matches, Survivor Series 1996, WrestleMania 13, and In Your House, Revenge of the Taker in April 1997, and basically the feud culminated with a five-on-five match at Canadian Stampede in July of 1997, and was supposed to go on from there, but various circumstances happened that it never really got the ending that it deserved. But it had a lot of terrific, amazing moments. One of my favorite feuds from what I've seen you write, one of your favorites as well. So why don't you talk about just, you know, where you kind of were as a wrestling fan and why this hooked you in particular?
Well, in 93 is when, about the summer of 93, my parents decided that the large town of 2,300 people of Brockville was too big, that we had to move out to the country. And we did that. Yeah, I know. We were on the edge of town, too, and it was too loud for them. So we were in the country. We didn't have TV. So I kind of – like SummerSlam 93 was the last thing I saw, and then I didn't get to watch again until like late 96. So, you know, Bret was kind of my favorite, being a Canadian teenager at the time. And then when I got back in is around when Bret returned. So that was kind of you know, a big deal at the time. I think that's what made me start watching week to week again, because I think we got like an illegal American satellite or something at the time, so I was able to watch. That was great. And then, you know, there was also the Canadian thing that came later, which really kind of sunk everything in, and what was going on in the country at the time, and all that was just, it was like perfect timing for at least the Canadian side of things. I don't know about the American side of things, but the Canadian side of things, it was absolutely perfect timing.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have worked any other time.
No. Really. And that's, of course, one of the unique aspects of the feud that kind of that happens after the WrestleMania 13 match, where Bret is the heel in the United States, but is the good guy pretty much everywhere else, especially in Canada. And that really that kind of, you know, home field advantage type thing. They did a lot of shows in Canada during that time, a lot of Raws, and really kind of played that up. And having the wildly different reactions from, you know, every few weeks or so, just really added a surreal element to the feud that made it memorable. And you know, it was very heated, particularly on the Canadian side. I mean, there was just some molten crowd reactions. That you know, another reason why this was made memorable. So I guess we should start some overall things for me is I mean, this feud really did change WWE in a lot of ways. I mean, the WrestleMania 13 match with the double turn, that's really a crucial moment for me in launching you know, Stone Cold up to the superstardom that he would later have at in the next couple of years. And it may have been like the there were several important moments during that time. I mean, Austin 316 setting up him up was important. Obviously,
here's the thing about that. I wanted to bring that up because sure. I actually looked it up. So King of the Ring, he wins, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's June.
Right.
In July, he's facing Mark Marrow in a mid-card match on the pay-per-view.
Right.
In August, at SummerSlam. He's in a pre-show match versus Yokozuna. In September, he's not even on the show. And then October, he's in the opener versus Triple H when Triple H was nothing. And then he went on to the Bret Hart match.
Right.
So, like, it's weird to think, like, everyone thinks that, you know, the Austin 316 kind of really launched him. But it was really the Bret feud, because before he was, they weren't really doing much with him.
Right.
At all.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Austin 316, it was important, and it set up, you know, kind of what the character could be. And it, you know, was this kind of this rallying cry, and he definitely gained a measure of popularity, probably a lot of popularity. He definitely got noticed by that moment, but yeah, you're right. They didn't take advantage of it right away. I mean, they were kind of slow to see what they had, or they were at least slow to exploit it. Maybe that maybe been somewhat for the better. I mean, I think they developed Austin slowly and waited a while before we got really, you know, him being, you know, world champion, and gave it really time for him to work up to that goal, rather than him getting hot and then, you know, getting the belt right away. I mean, I think that actually helped him quite a bit, but it wasn't like they saw Austin 316 and like, we're like, oh, this could be our guy forever. I mean, it took a lot of steps to do that. And obviously the feud with Bret was probably the most important.
Yeah. And also, I don't think if Bret didn't come back and like work with Austin, I don't know if we would have got, Austin may have become a top guy, but like, who on that roster is gonna put Austin into that position and make him the star? Like, Shawn Michaels is not gonna do it. Undertaker wasn't gonna do it. Who is gonna make Austin if it wasn't Bret?
Yeah,
like, we could have had big, like, the WWF could have had huge problems if Bret didn't come back and if he didn't work with Austin, I think.
Yeah, I mean, if he'd left for WCW or he just retired or whatever. I mean, yeah, there isn't like a natural replacement for that. I mean, you're right. You know, Michaels obviously was really talented, but he and Austin didn't really have the chemistry, and Shawn didn't, you know, he was newer at the top, where Bret had been at the top for, you know, 4 or 5 years. I mean, he was kind of the default guy during that time. I mean, he was the kind of the number one guy from 92 to 96. They went away from him here and there quite a bit, but he was definitely still I think the guy most viewed in that spot as kind of the, you know, the signature of the company, for lack of a better term. Yeah, I mean, it also, I think they, the way they work together, and they work so well together. I mean, I think that Austin's kind of manic intensity combined so well with Bret's discipline, and they just sort of, it was very physical, but very, performed very crisply and very well. Like, they, you know, didn't their matches didn't go off the rails hardly at all, but they had a certain element of extra danger that Bret's matches sometimes don't always have. I mean, just everything they just blended so well in that way. And I think these matches, particularly the WrestleMania 13, really were pretty crucial in kind of setting a new template for the way WWE main events would be, you know, wrestled over the next few years. Adding a lot more brawling, with the blood, adding more move reversals, doing each other's finishers, kicking out of finishers, things like that really weren't very done. Long submission segments, that was also something that hadn't been done very much. You know, stuff like that. So I really think that, and spots from the WrestleMania 13 match, you know, would be used later, even after Bret left. Obviously, the Austin Rock WrestleMania 17 match is basically several segments of it are taken from Bret Hart matches with Austin, because, you know, I mean, that's part of the story of the match, which is fine, but it definitely, you know, it owes a great debt to that. And that's, you know, really what established Austin to what he became.
Oh, yeah. And I think part of the reason that these two click so well is they both took themselves so seriously. Like, these two, like, there isn't too many wrestlers who put so much effort into everything they did, from character wise all the way through, and especially into the matches like this. Like, there is a lot of thought, and you can see when we talk about the final match, the difference, because that match is kind of booked the week before as a replacement match and that kind of stuff. So you can see the difference between a big match like Survivor Series or WrestleMania, where they had time to plan and stuff, and this final one here that we'll talk about, that they didn't have the time to plan it out. But yeah, and the crowd brawling too, I think, is a big part of that WrestleMania match, and you see it throughout Austin's run, really, as the top star. There's a lot of crowd brawling and
yeah,
that kind of stuff. So they take a lot from this feud, for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, it makes sense. These are Austin's best matches up to this point. So it would make sense that he would use the stuff there, especially once he dealt with injuries and couldn't do sort of the technical stuff that he showcased, especially in the 96 match. Those were kind of the options available to him. So he made it work, obviously. That's an understatement. So I see the overall feud as sort of like, you know, the pieces themselves are fantastic, you know, particularly the matches themselves, and there's some really memorable angles too, but it wasn't necessarily like that was sort of the, like, it does. They the WrestleMania 13 match wasn't supposed to happen, and it wasn't supposed to be a submission match until a few weeks before it happened. It was very thrown together. Like, it ended up being incredibly memorable, but there was definitely like it wasn't necessarily the hottest thing they had going in, even though they'd been working with each other and they had certainly had heat, but it was sort of not like, it wasn't this, you know, well-built thing that you might remember from, that you might think of, you know, given how classic the match was. And injuries kind of got in the way of things afterward. Austin was kind of moved over to the other Hart Foundation. Brett had to take some time off. And, you know, so there were just a number of things that kind of got in the path of them having, like, a really well-organized feud. But they had so many great things and so many memorable things that you can kind of look back at it and take the, you know, pieces you want of the puzzle and make just this, you know, great epic feud. And overall it was, but it wasn't like, I think it's better a little bit on paper than that's not the way I want to put it, because it was great in execution, but like, it's more coherent on paper than it was in execution, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's kind of like, one of those great TV shows that gets canceled before the final season.
Sure.
So you don't really get the payoffs and the yeah. conclusion that you want.
Right.
But everything leading up to it's great.
It's the Deadwood of
I was thinking the 4400. But
okay.
That's a
there you
minor
go. I've never stuff, seen that, so. but Deadwood I like, because this is the because I sort of see this as like, Brett is sort of is the sheriff who is corrupt. We don't know he's corrupt, and Austin is just the outlaw willing to challenge the sheriff, and the sheriff sort of goes to like, he sort of exposes himself as corrupt and as you know, willing to, you know, use whatever violence he needs to keep the outlaw in line, you know. Like, Brett, like, Austin isn't respectable. He's indecent, and Brett can't abide Austin doing that. You know, it's like, like the older generation, how they saw kids in the 50s or whatever. You know, it's or any kind of conflict like that, where you have the people who want to you keep things the way they are versus the people who don't have respect for authority. So I think that works really well as kind of a theme here, and as kind of a contextual thing for Brett. I mean, it's not out and out stated, but I think it's definitely subtext. That also fits with Austin being the relative newcomer and Brett as the old guard. And then I think eventually it's sort of, Brett demonstrates his corruption, sort of the corruption of the entire WWE system, which later feeds really well into the Austin McMahon feud.
Yeah, it is a good transition from there, but I remember at the time, and like, talking to people, like my friends and stuff like that, we didn't understand why people were cheering Austin. Like, it was so weird, because like, in America, there'd be like, Springer was popular, and South Park was like, well, I like South Park, but like, you know, those kind of like, more kind of ridiculous shows. And like, sitting there in Canada, and like, Austin's sitting there, and he's cheating, he's flipping people off, and he's, you know, Brett's just, he's telling the truth out there, like, all the time. Even like, his big heel turn promo, like, I just watched that again tonight, the one after WrestleMania, like, he doesn't say anything wrong. Like, everything he says is, you know, they did this and they screwed me, and it's all true. Like, yeah. he got screwed multiple times. So it was very interesting because, you know, they did have the split between the two crowds. And, like, from our perspective in Canada, like, Brett was a babyface, and he wasn't, like, he was only cheating because Austin was cheating, and he was, you know, trying to fight fire with fire, while Austin was, you know, a cheater all along. So it was, there's more than one way to kind of look at this.
Oh, thing, yeah, definitely. Very, absolutely.
Makes it more interesting than the majority of feuds in kind of the history of wrestling.
Yeah, right. I mean, yeah, I can't really think of another. I'm sure there's territories maybe where, you know, one guy was a heel in one town and a face in another town. But that, yeah, that's uncommon. I mean, that's really, I can't really think of a high profile feud that really had anything like this. I mean, they would kind of go back to the Canada US well on, you know, on occasion, really playing off Montreal for the most part. But it was never sustained. It was just, you know, a show here, a show here, and really just more like they would have a what they considered a weird crowd reaction because they were, you know, in Canada. That was kind of a thing for a while. It sort of died down now. And we're used to crowds that boo the main babyface. I mean, that's sort of now what wrestling is. So it's a completely different environment than it was back then.
But they still don't give us pay-per-views.
Oh, they don't?
The last pay-per-view in Canada was 2006.
Oh, they don't. Okay, they don't. Yes, you don't get them to Canada. They don't bring them to Canada. Maybe they just want you guys ruining the show. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. They're giving us a network special though.
Okay, well, that's nice. Yeah.
So, but yeah, we haven't had a pay-per-view since Toronto in 2006, which for like how great the crowds are in Toronto and how many tickets you can sell, it just seems insane.
Sure.
But yeah, I think they are still afraid of those crowds.
Yeah,
of them not reacting the way they want, which is weird because they never react the way they want anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I digress.
That's okay. That's all right. So getting into the Survivor Series 1996 match, you know, this is Brett's comeback after about 6 months out. He had lost the title at WrestleMania 12 to Shawn Michaels, and you know, expressed sort of disgust afterward at the way he had lost, and you know, sort of storms out, and this is the story, not so much the real life situation, although he didn't really so much like the how his title reign went down either. But so he comes back, and there's sort of a tease as to whether he's really going to come back to WWF, or they actually mentioned specifically that, you know, he's been offered a thing on from WCW, and they have like a big segment where they, you know, Brett makes his decision. He of course decides to come back to WWF, and then in the meantime, Austin has been doing promos, just basically ripping Brett, and I think the famous line is, if you put an S in front of the Hitman, that's what I think of him.
That's, you know, my exact opinion of Bret Hart.
Yes, yes. So they do a nice, I mean, you know, Austin is carrying for the most part the just the promos and, you know, showing that fire, and, you know, Bret is the old guard. And it's interesting the way that Vince McMahon and Jim Ross, the announce team here, which is interesting. It's pretty rare that the two of them did commentary together on pay-per-views. I mean, I'm sure it did happen other times, but it's just unusual. I usually think of Lawler being a part of that team, and he is part of the WrestleMania.
Yeah, Lawler is part of the matches on the show.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. So, and I actually kind of liked it because I kind of felt like Ross did the play-by-play a little bit more, and Vince sort of was more the color, and that actually I thought worked better. But anyway,
I think this is all time great commentary. I gotta say, like,
it is really
the
good
way they did it. Like this match, and I've seen this match a lot. It's actually my favorite match of all time, mm-hmm. and this time watching it made me really realize that this is the most the WWF has ever felt like a real sport. Like, you have them talking about ring rust, you have them talking about their strategies. Jim Ross is hyping up the athleticism and comparing it to boxing matches of the past and that kind of stuff. Like, this is the most kind of sports-like feel I've ever felt watching a WWF match. I don't know if you got that opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely that is a direction they definitely went into. I mean, I feel like the WrestleMania match with Shawn, there's quite a bit of that, too, even from Lawler, which, you know, I think it's one of the better matches that Lawler has, or the better jobs calling a match that Lawler's ever done. But yeah, there's absolutely that. But I also think it's interesting that they frame, like, Vince mentions Austin getting a good reaction in the crowd. He didn't even get that good of a reaction, but they mentioned, like, oh, some of the fans appreciate him. They are already sort of acknowledging, sort of kind of, you know, giving the vibe that Austin isn't just another heel. He's a guy that some people like, and he's sort of like, you know, he's already kind of got this in-between thing, even though he, you know, pretty much acts like a villain. I just thought that was interesting. I just thought, like, oh, you know, they definitely went to that early. Now, they don't really out and out, you know, they don't say anything bad about Brett. They do kind of wonder, like, you know, like, oh, is Brett, you know, has he been out too much? You know, they talk about the ring rust. They do talk about, like, whether he's, you know, maybe a step too slow or what have you. But I do think, I think they promote Austin more than they promote Brett in this match, which I think is interesting. I mean, they don't, you know, they don't not say nice things about Brett, but I feel like it's more of a push for Austin than it is for Brett. Like, I mean, I feel like they're more impressed by Austin than they are by Brett.
Well, I think, yeah, there's two parts that I think in one aspect, yeah, but it's kind of Vince being the one that's pushing Austin. Well, Jim Ross is kind of, you know, he's questioning if Brett can still do it, but he's still kind of, you know, in Brett's corner here.
Sure.
Like, because when they're cheering for Austin, you know, Vince goes, oh, he has his fans, whatever. And Jim Ross is like, well, it's New York and they're weird, you know?
Yes.
So there is that kind of act. So he kind of plays it off. And the other aspect is they really do have to build up Austin, because at this point, definitely, he's not anywhere near Bret Hart's level.
Sure.
Like, you know, when returning stars come back to the WWF now, they would not fight a guy like Austin. He's way too down low on the totem pole. So Austin wasn't there. So they had to really build him up to make you think that he was on Bret's level, because he hadn't been portrayed that way, you know, ever in his career. So
yeah,
that was part of it.
That is an excellent point. That's absolutely, you know, the case. They had, as you mentioned, other than the King of the Ring win, which would have been, you know, 4 months, 5 months before this, they had not really done much to build up Austin. It wasn't like he was winning, you know, a bunch of matches or getting this amazing push or, you know, going up the card. I mean, he had done things. He was pushed fine, but it wasn't like he was being pushed to the moon and being built up over, you know, better guys to, you know, kind of earn this shot in a way. I mean, he earned it by kind of more of just how he performed and the character he created and that, rather than any push they kind of gave him in the ring.
Yeah, and there's a video package before building this up, and they're doing the part where they're showing Austin beating people with the stunner, and it's all like Tracy Smothers and Bob Holly. Like,
yes.
He's not beating anyone of consequence at all.
Yes, and Austin was not yet very smooth with the stunner generally.
No.
It was very mechanical and very labored. You know, just didn't quite have that snap that he would have later. But so Ross tries to sort of pit this as a story where there's been like this obsession with Bret and Austin over the years, and I guess sort of, I'm not sure whether it's between Bret and Austin or maybe it's more like a people wonder who would win in a match between Bret and Austin, but I don't really feel like that's well supported at all. And I'm not really sure where he's going with that, but I thought that was an interesting tidbit to try to kind of bring out. I mean, I guess it's just to bring something out, just to bring out some atmosphere, and just, he's just saying that and get you to believe it, but there's nothing, it's not like, either, not like Bret and Sting where, you know, like they're these parallel guys who have the same finisher. People, you know, thought, okay, Bret and Sting, that would be a key match. You know, Austin was never really, it was not thought of in that level at all. So, but that was kind of another way. It was another kind of like off camera thing that, you know, it was another sort of detail. And I think kind of adds like to that sports feel that you're talking about.
Yeah. And actually, if you, in the match, you'll see Austin do a lot of Brett stuff.
Yes.
So I think he's kind of alluding to that. Like,
okay.
Because he tries to do a superplex off the top. He does the elbow drop the way Brett does it.
Yeah.
He does a bunch of little kind of Bret Hart moves. So I think it's kind of a way to kind of explain why he's wrestling like Bret Hart, really.
Okay.
I don't know if he was doing it before this match, because I don't really remember seeing much Austin in the WWF leading up to this. But he's definitely, in this match, cribbing a lot of Bret's moves. So I think that's part of it.
Yeah, that's good. That actually would probably been a good thing to point out by Ross. I mean, I noticed that he had borrowed his move, but I didn't make that connection. But that's a good connection to make. So, yeah, I mean, so this is your favorite match. So what stands out to you about this match?
So what I love about it is kind of like a farewell to old school wrestling in the WWF. Like, it's the last great old school slow building peaks and trolleys match.
Yeah. It's in Madison Square Garden, but, too, so that's important.
Yes, in Madison Square Garden. You know, it's got this old school North America. It's like what Bret Hart thinks wrestling should be type of match, like
yeah.
the ultimate sign of that. And it never really happens again in the WWF. Like, and it still hasn't really. These types of matches don't happen. So it's kind of like this last, you know, great goodbye to old school wrestling. So that's
sure.
part of my
so,
love
so
for
what,
it.
What about it to you is makes it old school wrestling?
Well, you got the really, like, they start off with chain wrestling for
yeah.
like a good 3 or 4 minutes, 5 minutes, and it builds from there. You have the story of Austin the only way he can gain advantage is by either cheating or brawling, while Brett is, you know, taking advantage with takedowns and arm bars, and he's just old school wrestling him that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the story. You have Austin. Almost all of his offense is exclusively going to Brett's chest and his ribs and his sternum to, like, because Brett has the ring rust, he's trying to wear him down so he can't breathe as well. So, like, all of his offense is really focused on the back and that kind of stuff. So that's really well focused that way. There's points where it gets really heated and then they slow it back down, which is really great. And the other part I really love about this, and one of my favorite things, is there's a lot of like comeback stuff.
Right.
Like, earlier in the match, Austin goes for a superplex off the second rope, but Brett counters it. So the next time he goes for a superplex, you know, he pounds the shit out of him, and then he's like, wait a second, and then he goes to the third rope because the second rope was countered. And yeah, that turns out to a good spot. Austin gets the stun gun earlier, and Brett reverses it to get the stun gun later. And there's just all these callback spots that are slowly integrated throughout the match. And it just builds to a fever pitch and ends up with a finish that, you know, Brett, one thing I love about Brett, he always, like, if he has a really cool thing, it's like he doesn't forget it. Like, you know, like he did this when he beat Piper with this, and he's like, well, I'll try it again here.
Yeah.
So he tries again here. So.
WrestleMania 8, yeah, it's the same finish where he, in this case, Austin goes for the $1 million dream, Cobra Clutch, and Austin or Brett kicks his feet off the turnbuckle and backs him up and then is able to roll over and pin him as Austin is holding on. So yeah, that's a good finish. And the nice thing about that is, like, he doesn't overdo those either. Like, he'll do them like once every 4 or 5 years. So you remember it, but it's not like he's always doing it.
Yeah. I think the other one of my favorite moments is early in the match. You know, Brett's come back, he's got ring rest, all that stuff. And they have a slugfest and Austin, you know, wins. And later in the match, after all this stuff has happened, they have another slugfest, and that's the one that Bret Hart wins this time. Jim Ross, like, says one of my favorite commentary lines is, like, he won't quit. He doesn't know how to quit. And,
yeah.
like, Bret sells exhaustion better than, like, anyone in the history of wrestling. He just
yeah.
looks so tired, but this guy is such a bully, and he's got to stop him somehow, and he won't give up to do it. So, yeah, just the whole story and him being his comeback and the way it really took Austin from essentially a mid-carder to pushing him to the near the top of the card where, you know, a couple months later at the Royal Rumble, he's a guy that could win it. Like, he completely made someone, you had the crowd too at the start. It's kind of 50-50, right? Or at least they're cheering for Austin a bit. But later on, after all this stuff Austin has done and Bret Hart's great selling, it's all let's go Hitman. There's like no Austin cheering at all. So there's that part too. Yeah, just so much to this match. Yeah, love it.
Yeah, I really like with Bret doing the bulldog that he's done 1,000 times, but Austin countering by shoving him into the turnbuckle, doing Bret's famous chest first in the turnbuckle. That's like one of the better versions of that chest first turnbuckle bump that I've ever seen. And it really looked physical, really looked really good. I thought it was interesting that Ross kept alluding to his belief in the match that it will end in submission. And actually, Austin does do some submissions of him. He does a Texas Cloverleaf. He breaks out a bow and arrow, of all things.
And it's so weird because, like, obviously the WrestleMania match wasn't the plan. But, like, here we are setting up the WrestleMania match with the submission story.
Right.
It's so weird.
So there's another one where Austin does the top rope superplex, and then Bret, like, they're both landing, you know, they both land and they're both tired, and then Bret and Austin, like, Bret, like, basically lifts his feet and sort of gets Austin in a pinning predicament. Austin kicks out, but that's a nice that's a nice spot too. I've seen that a few times, but it's definitely well done. I also liked Bret getting thrown into the turnbuckle like usual, but instead of doing the face first one, he falls down and then he slides into the ring post kidney first. It looks vicious and it's really really well done. And then after
and more work on his stamina, his breath, because hitting him in the back, the kidneys more offensive because that, and his leg gave out because he just got out of the Texas Cloverleaf.
Right.
So,
all perfect. Very sound, yeah. I also liked Austin breaking a sleeper hold with a jawbreaker, and then he slaps himself to to wake him up. And there Vince says, what a competitor. The Hitman has met his match. Another interesting thing about the announcing is that they don't really, like, anything that Austin does as a heel, like, they don't really, like, they don't scold him for it. He's, like, it's just sort of, like, playing this is just a physical match and it's getting a little dirty, but they don't really like they don't really shame Austin into they don't guilt him for his heel tactics. They're pretty much just blasé about it, which I think is interesting because I feel like that's not usual practice, especially for Vince.
Yeah, and it's also interesting because like at one point after Austin hit the stunner and like Bret has to roll him to the middle of the ring, right?
Right.
Because he's too close to the ropes. And then he kicks out because he took so long to get the cover. And Austin's pissed and he keeps going for cover and cover and cover. I think this is the point where the referee's kind of admonishing him and like Austin flips him off.
Right.
And the commentators don't play it off as like this dastard heel flipping off the ref. It's Jim Ross going, don't be stupid. You can't win if you get disqualified.
Yes.
Yeah. It's very weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right.
Yeah. And they make a, you know, when Bret wins, Ross makes a big deal about Austin didn't let go of the hold, you know, he practically pinned himself. Like it almost like undermined it a little bit by Bret, you know, like making it seem like Bret had nothing to do with it almost.
Yeah.
Which I thought was interesting. They kind of play it up as like, you know, oh, what a smart thing by Bret later, but, I love the way that Austin, he's on the floor, Bret's in the ring, and he stares at Bret, and then he takes, like, a moment to, like, let his mistake sink in and just, like, you know, like, I came so close and I did this stupid thing or whatever. It was a very human moment for him in the midst of, like, this vicious stare down, you know, they keep eyeing each other, clearly this is going to continue type thing, so.
Yeah, and then we get this weird moment where, you know, they talk about such a great match and Vince like congratulates Bret and is like, great job. And then the weirdest, like we talked about some weird commentary things. This is the weirdest thing to me and I've never understood it. So after the match, that means Bret Hart is going to get a title shot next month against whoever the champion is. And Jim Ross goes, well, on this night, how great Bret was, neither Sid or Shawn Michaels could beat him. Like, Brett was so on his game tonight that neither of them could beat him.
Mm-hmm.
And Vince goes, I completely disagree with that. And then they just move on. It's so weird.
Yeah. I guess maybe it's just to give you a sense of, like, there's no consensus or that they both, you know. But yes, that's a strange one. That is, well, what can you do? So, so they end up at the next pay-per-view. It's a Brett Sid match, right?
Yeah. And Sean's on commentary,
right?
And he kind of gets in Brett's face and causing Brett to lose.
Right. So this is an instance of Brett getting screwed.
Yeah. Like WrestleMania, where they added extra time after it went to a draw.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So this is part of this narrative for Brett now. After that, that's sort of the first step in that. And at the Royal Rumble, Austin is eliminated, but the refs don't see it. And then and Austin sends Brett out, so Austin wins the Royal Rumble. Then they decide to. In the meantime, Sean vacates the title. It's the infamous I Lost My Smile.
There's actually a great moment before that, because after the Royal Rumble, the next night on Raw, Brett basically says that he won because he was the last legal guy in the ring.
Sure.
And he just got screwed again, so he quits and he walks out mid-show.
Oh, okay.
And Vince leaves the commentator booth, and then he and Gorilla converse and all this stuff. And they end up offering the final four as, like, a consolation.
Right.
So how that sets
that
up.
But that wasn't going to be for the title shot. Yes. And then it ends up being for the title once the title is vacated. Now, 97 for me, I started watching basically every week August of 97. Now, I was watching here and there. But I definitely didn't watch everything, so there are probably gaps for me here. I did some review, obviously, but there will certainly be things that may escape. So I'm glad you're here, who has a better memory about it than I do. So
well, this was my shit.
Yes. So at Final Four, Brett gets screwed over again, and Sid wins the.
No,
wait a minute. Who wins the... No, Brett does win the match. Brett wins the match, and then Sid beats him the next night.
Yeah, he gets the... gets the title shot the next night, and they try to start the match three times, and Austin attacks Brett each time. And then in the middle of the match, Brett has Sid in the sharpshooter, and Austin nails him with a chair,
right,
leading to the powerbomb. So yes. Brett gets screwed by Austin again.
Yes.
Here.
And then there's the Brett and Sid cage match where then it's like 2 weeks before WrestleMania, maybe 2 or 3.
It's the week before.
Oh, it's the week before. Okay.
Yeah. And they do it.
That's
in
right.
An interesting way.
Yeah.
Because the Austin Brett and the Sid Taker matches are going to happen anyways.
Right.
So if Brett wins, it's the title match now with Austin, and if Sid wins, Taker gets the title match.
Right.
So Taker interferes and attacks Brett, and Austin interferes and attacks Sid.
Yes.
In a weird way.
And this is in the midst of a big change in direction for WWE, you know, which basically the start of what is really considered, you know, what eventually would kind of be known as the Attitude Era, but is very much like we're all these shades of gray, you know, more cursing, more violence, more risque stuff. I mean, it was definitely the infancy of that, and there were times in, you know, 95 and 96 where they would play, you know, they would do an angle here or there that, you know, you could kind of link toward the later Attitude Era. But I really think the formative stages of it are kind of happening right around this time.
Yeah, and I think they were going to 2 hours at this point.
Yeah.
And they switched the set, so it had the Titantron around this time too.
Right, it's the Raw is War now instead of just Monday Night Raw.
Yeah, and they have the War Zone. They had ECW already on the show like a couple weeks before that.
Right.
So yeah, there was a lot of different. They were basically getting their ass kicked by WCW, and they were trying anything to get back on track.
Sure. So that leads to Undertaker costing Brett the match. Sid wins. And then there's a post-match angle, very memorable, that where they're taking down the cage, and Brett is, you know, yelling that he's been screwed, and he's cursing, and he shoves Vince McMahon down when he tries to calm him down, and basically just freaks out, and you know, there all this like paranoia and all this anger and all this stuff that's been building up just, you know, comes out of him. And you know, he comes off okay, so how did you see this? Because I do remember seeing this, and it just blew me away because I'd never seen anything like this in any wrestling. You know, this was as far away from 80s WWF that I grew up on as it could be. So, and I was intermittently back in wrestling. I may have been aware of ECW, but I didn't know anything about it. I guess I did. I watched the Raw that ECW was on too, so I guess I had heard of ECW from that, but I may have read about it. Like, I think Spin Magazine had a profile of ECW or something, so I may have read that. But I knew very little. It would be my point. So this was just like this blow away, like amazing, like what is this? What is Brett doing? Like I might even thought like, is this real? You know, it was just so yeah, different from what it was. I didn't really understand like how wrestling worked yet. Like I the mechanics of it and how things were done. It just, you know, and it was presented in a way where it was kind of meant to be different, but kind of meant to make you think, like, you know, playing off of these real life tensions or whatever. So, you know, it's not like I was ridiculous for thinking that, but it was just like it was just kind of completely a thing. So where are you seeing it? You're a big Brett fan. You're on his side on this stuff. What do you see when you're, you know, your hero or a guy, you know, the hero of your nation it acts like this? How'd you feel about that?
Well, he was getting screwed, right?
Sure.
Like, we just listed 8 times where he got screwed out of the world title in the last 6 months. Right. And Austin was in the forefront of most of those.
Sure.
So, you know, I wanted to see, you know, Brett kill Austin, but it was kind of like more, this is so cool, right? Like, he said, goddamn on TV.
Right.
Like, you don't say that on TV. Sure. And like, that's when they had to go to the delay in Canada.
Yeah.
I don't know if they did it in the States, but they had to go delay Raw by like 5 minutes or something so they could beep stuff out. So there was that part. And then he punches out Pat Patterson, which just seemed so out of place. And Vince is almost swears on the mic too. He's like, he just punched Hall of Famer Pat Patterson. That's good goddamn son of a
bitch. Right.
So it was just some of like this weird chaotic scene that you don't normally see. So
And Vince had never acted like that. Yeah, Vince had never. Yeah, you know, Vince had been straight laced, and you know, had you know, at least I'd never seen him act like that. I don't think they had presented him that way on TV. They were about to start presenting him as actually the starting to acknowledge that he was the owner of WWE and really in charge of things when you know, before
they kind of hinted it the night after the Royal Rumble, the one when he quit, because like he went to Vince
right
and was like, you allowed this to happen. Like all this stuff, and he started like going at Vince, and then Vince left to talk to Gorilla to make the plan to do the Final Four.
Right.
So they kind of had hinted at it before, but
definitely during this period where that is, you know, becoming, you know, open in the show or before people, you know, who were smart knew about it, but not necessarily everybody knew about it. And it definitely wasn't a thing on the show. So, and you know, the original plan for WrestleMania was Brett Shawn rematch. Shawn got hurt. That actually might have been derailed even before Shawn got hurt, but when Shawn got hurt, definitely wasn't happening. And so they moved to, you know, what they moved to. And I remember Austin talking about when he heard it was going to be a submission match. And I think he'd been out with a knee injury. You know, when he heard it was a submission match, he's like, how the hell are we going to do a submission match? Like, that isn't, you know, I don't really have any submissions. And it just, you know, it didn't seem like the way to do that in the feud, but obviously they made it work pretty well.
Yeah. And it's so strange, all that stuff, especially coming off the Survivor Series match where Jim Ross talked about it being a submission match and Austin just going for submission.
Sure.
Like, I think I have to reread Brett's book because I don't remember it, but I feel like Austin might just have bad memory skills here.
It's possible. Had to be something. Yeah, I mean that's true. I don't remember what Brett's book said about it either, and I would probably address that a little bit more as better research than Austin's stuff here. But it's really interesting given the circumstances of what happened in Montreal a few months later. the framing of Brett here, seeing himself as screwed, the idea of him being paranoid, his self-righteousness, all that stuff is definitely feeds very well into how he was portrayed after the Montreal Screwjob by WWE. I mean, it's a, you could definitely, it's wild, honestly, that he's basically fitting into everything they said they would say about him later. Character, obviously, but still, it is interesting. He does
there's
mostly
so many fascinating aspects to this, isn't
there? Yeah. I mean, there's more than that, but that is, but that is absolutely fascinating. He mostly gets cheers coming out. I don't really hear any boos in particular. Austin is cheered. I don't know. Do you think they were fairly equally cheered, or I'm not even sure. I mean, they both definitely get pretty good reaction.
Yeah, they both. It's like no one wants to root against either of them, kind of deal.
Yeah.
Type of thing. What I love about Brett's entrance here at WrestleMania is that Austin just did his, and he had the glass break as
right.
he came out, so Brett had to step over the broken glass of Austin's entrance.
Yes.
As kind of a little, a little added insult to injury there. But yeah, I think because people didn't want to boo Brett at all, I don't think.
I don't think there was like it wasn't like, oh my god, Bret Hart, he's so I mean, you always kind of thought of Bret as a hero, even though he'd been a heel in the past. It was there was no like, I don't think people were sick of Bret. It wasn't like, I mean, he'd been around for a long time, but I don't think people were like, oh, he's, they were sick of Hogan because Hogan had just been on top forever. Bret had moved up and down and hadn't been champion the whole time or anything like that, and he'd obviously had a fairly decent absence, so he was fresh. And I don't think people were we're absolutely hoping for a heel turn, but I mean, obviously it worked and they made it work, and maybe they didn't know they wanted one, but they ended up wanting it by the end.
And the match is so perfectly laid out to make Austin this unbelievable babyface. Like, it's laid out perfectly as Austin as the babyface, like from the very very beginning almost, which is kind of interesting. That it wasn't like they were like working together fairly and then something happened and Brett snapped. It was just a slow progression to the whole thing.
Yeah. In fact, Brett, he does give us the kid the sunglasses at the beginning. I guess it would have been suspicious if he didn't.
I think it was his own kid.
I think you might be right. Yeah, it wasn't one of his kids that I recognized, but he's a lot of kids. So, and his kids were there. They mentioned later his daughter is covering her eyes as he's being beaten. So it probably was. But I didn't specifically recognize the child. So not that I am an expert in Bret Hart's children, by any. That'd be weird, but. They start off pretty wild. They go into the crowd quickly. They're there for maybe a good 3 minutes or so. They go up and down the crowd. It's a very ECW style crowd brawl. Vince is very much calling this match with Brett as a heel. Ross is reluctant to do so. Lawler is still anti-Brett as usual. That would change
Vince,
quickly, but
yeah, Vince and Lawler are on one side and Jim Ross is on another.
Yeah.
It's very strange.
And Ross is there. Like he's sort of there to a point. Like he's like, well, I mean, what Brett did, was he's had a bad attitude and what he did, on Monday was unforgivable, but he's not a coward. He defends him to a, to a point. They had a nice moment in commentary fairly early in the match where, I think Austin hits the stunner. And then Lawler kind of points out that Austin doesn't want to knock Brett out. And then Lawler, there's sort of a pause. And then Ross says, well, in that case, if one of them's out, the ref would have to call it in that situation. It's easy. So setting up what ends up being the finish, but not doing it like in a way where I feel like it doesn't in a way that I'm not clued in. That's going to be the finish. They just do it in a very natural way where, where it explains what happens later, but it's not like, oh, I see it coming because of that.
Yeah, it was this was like the height of their announcing together as like a three-man team, I think.
Yeah,
like they do a really they do a really good job of like kind of teasing that Brett's turning heel and kind of teasing that Austin is this big baby face, even though they aren't at this point. And Lawler, you know, he's still with Austin and against Brett. And it's just a whole, it's interesting the way the whole thing works. And they do a good job. And there's a lot of really great lines in this match throughout the commentary.
Yeah, sure. Definitely. I believe we have the first ring post figure four by Brett here, if I'm not mistaken. That's the first time he did it.
Yeah, I think so. And it worked much better than his ring post sharpshooter he tried later in the year.
Oh, I forgot about the ring post sharpshooter. When did you do
it
that?
It was SummerSlam versus Undertaker. Oh, and yeah. It looked horrible.
Yeah, I like that match a lot. But yeah, you're right. That did not work quite as well. Brett is the first to – he's escalating the things a lot in the match. He's the first to get weapons. He is adding to the action, always kind of making, like, doing things more vicious and being more villainous as things go through.
It's kind of the opposite of the Survivor Series match,
yes,
where Austin was the one doing all these things.
Right, yeah.
Austin was the one bringing it to the floor and cheating and all these things, while Brett was keeping it clean, and it's kind of been reversed for this match.
Sure. The fans go really nuts when Brett sets up the Brett wraps a chair around Austin's ankle. He's going to go to the second rope and jump down on it, just like Austin did against Brian Pillman, famously, I believe, the fall of 96. I guess that was kind of the big thing that Austin did in 96, was the Pillman gun thing. I kind of forgot about that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was – that didn't really lead to much, because Pillman was hurt, and they didn't really – I think they wrestled a little, but they didn't have, like, a high-profile match. That was more of kind of a TV thing that they were involved in. But so I guess Austin did – get some notoriety from that, if nothing else. Guess that was kind of led that may have been kind of a way of pushing him in a way, even, because it just did add some notoriety to the character and kind of added to, like, the insanity and what will he do and that sort of thing. But that just occurred to me as he was doing that. But yes, the fans go crazy for that, and then Austin pops up and grabs the chair and nails Brett on the head on the top rope, and fans go nuts for that too. Austin tries to go for the sharpshooter. He taunts Brett.
Well, at that point, sorry.
Sure.
Austin hits this chair shot to Brett's back that Brett sells like it's utter death.
That's, yes.
And it's one of the most vicious chair shots, but you know it's super safe. And you wonder why they switched to head chair shots at all when you could do it that good.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure it still hurts in the back. I mean, I'm sure it's not quite, it's not perfect.
Well, yeah.
But yes, but it's better than, you know, to the head for sure. I mean, I guess the head is more impressive, and maybe it's harder to make a back one look good than it is to make a head one look good, because the head one's just going to – you're going to have that sound and that – just the visual, you know, the visceral image of it. But that's a good question. Austin, he goes for the sharpshooter, taunts Brett, and then Brett rakes the face, another kind of sneaky heel thing to get out of it. Austin starts bleeding after he's thrown, he rams the railing, sort of thrown into the timekeeper's table area. And then Brett just wails on Austin's knee with a chair while Austin rides. I mean, he takes the chair to that knee, many, many times. He is being very vicious and very violent in his attacks, and the crowd doesn't really turn on him or anything. The crowd didn't really super boo him until the very end. But I don't know if he's
still the Shamrock thing, really.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But definitely, people are getting in. They may not be booing Brett, but they definitely are getting into Austin, like, coming back, and probably are rooting for him to win. You know, if I were going to take the crowd temperature, it's always dangerous to do that. But I would guess that they're kind of getting more toward Austin's side at this point.
Yeah. And, you know, if you're looking at it from Brett's side, like, it's clear it's just his frustrations coming out. Like,
right.
You can see it not as a heel move. Like, if they didn't turn him, do a double turn at the end, like, this match could have been okay.
Sure.
Right? Like,
yeah.
you know, Austin had screwed him so many times, and he'd attack him all the time, and now he's just gonna Layla him, take him out, and make him submit, and that, you know, that'll be the end of that feud, and they go on from there. So
yeah, and, you know, in a different context,
it's very well done.
Yeah, in a different context, this is basically just Austin getting his medicine from Bret. You know, and
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you're absolutely right. Austin's able to keep Bret from locking the sharpshooter with a rake of the face, and then hits a low blow later. JR that was down there by Saskatoon. quote.
That's so weird. Have you ever looked at? Oh, first of all, Saskatchewan is not like the lowest province in Canada.
Well,
yes. If you look at a map of Saskatchewan, Saskatoon's like a third of the way up, and there's like two major cities below it. So, like, saying Saskatoon, that's a low one, is, like, the weirdest line. Like, he has no concept of geography at all.
No, I think the idea – I mean, I just think it's – Saskatoon's a funny name. So, it's just the idea that
– But Moose Jaw is lower.
Moose Jaw is good, too. But I think Saskatoon is maybe
Over
he's
China?
He's aware of yeah, right, exactly. I mean, maybe he's just aware of it, 'cause where Bret won his first title. I don't know, but I just think it's funny. Saskatoon is just a funny name that it works in the context, even though, yes, it isn't technically true. Way to ruin it, Steven.
Well, you know.
Way to be technical. way to be Canadian. way to actually know where Saskatoon is.
Yeah, I guess no one, not too many people watching, would actually care or know where Saskatoon
yes.
was.
Yes.
Or what it was, even.
You're right, yeah. So yes. I laughed when he said it. So.
I did too, for different reasons.
Bret gets a big pop for nailing Austin with the bell as he's being choked by a cable. And Bret locks in the sharpshooter for the first time. We get a close-up of Austin struggling bloodily but refusing to give up, almost passing out, and then powering out. It's one of the image that would be just used so much for Austin's story and for the next few years.
What's so great is he uses all of his energy to almost power out, right?
And yes.
Like, this was his last chance.
Yeah.
But Bret kept it on. He didn't actually let go.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that was it.
He breaks it to the point where Bret like tumbles over and, you know, doesn't have the leverage. But yeah, Bret is able to hold on, keeps a hold of the legs, and then gets back into position, gets the leverage again, and then Austin finally passes out. He teases passing out earlier with the blood coming out, but he finally does. And Shamrock calls for the – or he asks Austin if he has given up, and Austin doesn't respond, and then finally he calls for the bell, and Jim Ross yells, "Austin never gave up." And then we get a few minutes to kind of just sort of let everything soak in. And then Bret attacks Austin. Shamrock pulls him off and stares him down. And then Bret avoids the fight to help cement the heel turn.
And the crowd really wanted to see Shamrock and Bret go at it.
Yes.
At that point. And didn't really get that till like November in like a throwaway match. But yeah, that whole thing, I think the point where he attacks him and then he walks away is like, it's weird to hear a crowd turn so quickly for like it wasn't like a big heel turn. It's not like he took money or there was nothing like that. He continued to attack after the bell and walked away from a guy. And that was it. That was all they needed. Like, they wanted obviously to cheer Austin in this case. And this was like the final switch to be like, okay, it's okay. And and they just lost it at Bret at that point, which was great.
And Austin refuses help. He stuns the ref, and then he walks off on his own to cheers and to Major Austin chants. And history was made.
Yep. Big time.
Yes, yes. So so in between the second and then the third major match they had, the Revenge of the Taker match, Bret makes peace with Davey Boy Smith and Owen Hart, who had been a tag team for a long time, but were, you know, in the midst of, they'd been building up toward a breakup for a couple months, I think. And as they're about to come to blows, Brett intercedes and he convinces them to stay together. He says that, you know, the WWF's been tearing them apart forever and they just want to be together. And eventually they do make peace and create the Hart Foundation. So Brett now has a stable. Later, Jim the Anvil, Neidhart, and Brian Pillman will be added to it as well.
Yeah, and those Raws were so good because, yeah, the night after WrestleMania, he does the whole speech about all the times he was screwed, and he basically says, screw America. I don't respect the American fans. I only respect the fans of Germany and Canada and the Britain and these other countries that know what respect is. And then Sean comes out, and he beats up Sean and puts on the figure four, and then the next week he beats up The Rock. Well, Rocky, and it puts the figure four on him.
Who was the Intercontinental Champion, but although had been booed, the crowd turned on him by that point, but obviously was not what The Rock would turn into. But
And they actually, at that point, they announced a Brett-Sid match for In Your House.
Okay.
And so that was the plan, and then they had a split show where half the show was in, like, half the company was in Europe or Africa and the other half was there. So they have the angle where the Hart Foundation's joined, and then they have like a nothing Raw, and then they have a Raw from South Africa. So there's nothing to build up Brett and Austin at all.
That's right.
It's like announced the week before, just like, oh, they're having a match. Like, there's nothing there. There's no feud. There's no angle. It's just like, well, Sid's gone, so Brett's facing Austin, and that was it.
Yes.
So little notice. And also Brett, the next night is going to be his last match before his surgery on his leg.
Right.
So he's pretty hurt going into this In Your House match as well. So
yeah,
there's a lot going on there.
Although he hides it very well. I would have had no idea he was hurt up until the end of the match when they set up something that where he's limping because of it. But other than that, yeah, he did not. At least I did not particularly notice anything that made him seem hurt. So something interesting about this match is that, like, I had actually, up until about a week ago, I'd never seen it. And it's weird because, of course, Brett and Austin have these two classic matches that are, among the best of time and these groundbreaking stuff and two of the best matches in WWF history. And it just seems odd that I never pursued the third one. It is not really talked about that much. I've never seen much discussion about it. I'm sure it's discussed somewhere in corners, but I've never really heard anybody talk about it. And part of it is that it's from kind of a throwaway show, as you talked about. There wasn't much build to it. It's not a major pay-per-view show. Matches at major pay-per-views tend to be talked about a lot more, remembered a lot more, because it's part of this lineage of these, tradition of these shows, particularly WrestleMania, of course. And you told me that you haven't really not seen it since basically it happened. Is that right? Or soon after it happened?
I might have watched it once after it happened, but I don't recall it at all. I just kind of remember the ending, and that was about it. And it's also, I think, part of the issue with the match, and like we'll talk about it in detail after this, but I think they had this vicious submission match, and then now they're just gonna have a regular match.
Yeah,
it just seems weird, right?
It is a little bit weird. It is sort of like a step back. I mean, it's a really good match. It's nothing compared to the other two, but it is very good. I mean, it's enjoyable. It's well performed. I think they do tell a pretty good story, and they sort of give Austin a moment of triumph. It's not quite the victory, but it's that combined with what happens the next night definitely gives him sort of the claim to be the better man and to have sort of, won the feud, at least at this point. Not the ultimate win, but a win in the feud. So I think it's well done, but yeah, it's weird that it's not really a match that's ever talked about. I guess there's also the Canadian Stampede 10-man tag match that they're both a big part of that centers around their feud continuing. So that's the three all-time classics. I guess that's there's only certain amount of room for.
But the Final Four is really, really good too.
Yeah, that's not really talked about either. But that's a very good match as well. you know, so yeah, it is strange. I don't know if there's anything else that you could kind of think of that is why it's not really well remembered, but it is it does seem a little, even though we've talked about reasons why that might be, it still seems like, okay, this is kind of a forgotten part of history. And just for me personally, like, okay, why didn't I bother looking at this match before? I mean, I guess I knew the finish of it. I knew it didn't have a satisfying conclusion, so that I guess that was part of it. But
Well, and
I
also the show is called Revenge of the Taker,
that's true.
which and it's Undertaker Mankind was actually the main event going into the show. And throughout the show they do these angles where at first Austin arrives and then Davey Boy and Owen go looking for him, and then Austin goes in the bathroom and Davey Boy and Owen jump him. So they switch the match order around. So they put the Taker Mankind match earlier so that they could give Austin some more time to rest before the match to recover from the injury. So, like, the show is built, it's called Revenge of the Taker, and the main event ends up being Austin Brett. So it's very, that, like, I think that also adds to it because that's just weird with me.
That's a fair point, yes. So we start off with the with referees and Gorilla Monsoon refusing to allow Bulldog and Owen at ringside along with Brett. They brought us to start. Look at those fists fly, as Vince says. And Vince likes the phrase "tip top shape." He uses it "tip top shape." He uses it several times in a row.
Like a minute, he says like four times.
Yes. Both these athletes are in tip-top shape. Austin hits a very nice snap suplex fairly early in the match. He and they go outside. Brett is sent into the steps. Then Austin approaches him, taunts him, and then slams his face into the steps again, which is a nice little moment. And then Austin goes back into the ring, and then he mocks Brett his taunt of pointing at himself as he comes out to the match, or not really pointing at himself, but sort of like that you know, that palm, you know, moving the palms back and forth. I don't know how you describe it.
Whatever that pose is called,
Whatever
yeah.
Brett's pose is called, whatever he does, he's mocking that, which I don't know if I've ever seen anybody mock that before. So
Yeah, I don't think so.
yeah.
Listen, and no one does it, really.
Yeah, that's
It's
true.
a weird pose.
It is kind of odd, yeah.
Yeah, but this is this is the start of the match here, and they basically do the classic formula of the babyface shine, the heel control segment, and then the comeback. So
Right.
this is all just Austin's shine at the beginning here, and just giving the crowd something to cheer about before the babyface is in danger here. And it's really good. And it's completely different than the other two matches too,
Yeah.
because they have to play within the rules because there is rules in this one, but they really hate each other. So they're Austin's just going nuts on him, and making fun of him and pointing the middle finger at him and throwing him into the guardrail and doing everything he can. He does. I will get to that in a second. But yeah, he's doing everything he can to be a jerk to Brett. And part of it too here, I think, is the interesting is the commentary that they're trying to figure out Austin as a babyface because this is like his first major babyface match.
Right, which is
So like
that's another thing. Like, this is Austin's first major babyface match. Maybe that's worth, like, you know, that seems important. Like,
does.
yes.
But like the commentators aren't sure exactly how to portray him as a babyface. So
Sure.
like later on they start talking about him as a machine, like that, I guess that's their first attempt, and it just
Yeah,
feels
they
weird.
use him. Yeah, they it's like what you call Dean Malenko or something, you know.
Yeah, I know. But not your future number one
Sure,
babyface,
sure.
But whatever.
And the machine's running out of gas, you know, is I feel like they say something, you know, a variation of that, like several times during the match. Yeah, they fight outside. Austin tosses Brett over the rail, and then he hops onto the rail, jumps off of it, and hits Brett with a axe handle. Austin
Which
showing
something
some hops
Brett
there.
does, yeah, and Brett did that exact same thing at WrestleMania to Austin, so nice
Oh.
little callback.
Oh yeah, there you go. That's right. Also Austin does the double middle finger second rope elbow drop. Another Brett staple without the double middle finger, of course. Brett then drop kicks Austin into Earl Hebner, and he then works over Austin's knee with a chair behind the ref's back. So getting control of the match after this. I like how Brett checks the ref position before every shot that he gets, and then he gets rid of the chair exactly the right time, and then goes over to help the ref. That's
he helped the referee up like he's this nice, caring guy. It's so good.
Exactly.
And I like the way they get the chair into the thing, because like they're brawling near the guardrail, and Brett kind of just gets tangled up with the chairs. So when he gets into the ring, the chair is just kind of like a byproduct of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he hits, you know, the cheap drop kick, which I don't think Bret Hart does drop kicks very often. So that's
often.
Kind of interesting.
He doesn't have the best drop kick.
No, but no. It looked good here.
He has done standing drop kicks here and there, but yes, it's not, he doesn't go to it too often because it's not that good. So
yeah, and this whole, and you know, they have to play within the rules, so Brett's cheating like a mofo, but like behind the ref's back. It's a good little segment here.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, Brett,
yeah,
one of the things he's great at is working the leg, and yes, yeah, he does it good.
This is, yeah, again, also, this is Brett's first major match as a heel, which, again, another important thing. Like,
well, the Vince McMahon points out that Brett was a heel when he first came to the WWE.
That's true, which
and
I like.
He cheating as well.
Yes, he I love that he brought that up. He does call Brett a master cheater, which is not exactly the way I remember the Hart Foundation. I mean, not that the Hart Foundation didn't cheat, but I feel like like the master cheaters were more Neidhart. Jimmy Hart was really the master cheater there, and you know, and Neidhart and Brett certainly cheated. But I feel like the master of cheating would have been their manager, at that point. Anyway, that's me being you about Saskatoon, and that's me, you know, being very technical there.
I like it.
Yes, I appreciate it. So more working over the knee, quite a bit of variety there. And I like how whenever Austin tries to rally, Brett cuts him off with something cheap, like an eye rake or, you know, just sneaky things to, he's being sneaky, but without like overdoing it. Like,
yeah.
He's not quite like all the, like he, even though I loved early Hollywood Hogan, he isn't like going from like instantaneous, like, hero to coward in like, you know, in 5 seconds. I mean, it's a transition a little bit. I mean, he's being a little bit dirty, but not really, like, he didn't change like his entire character in a month.
Well, the thing is, he had to, he could only cheat so much,
right?
Because
yes,
he had the rest of the world to be a hero for.
Yes.
So he had to like cheat to play fire with the baby faces, but not cheat so much that other people would find him as a cheat, right? Yes. So it's a fine line.
It is
work,
very fine,
really.
And he did very good job, not surprisingly. after that, he gets a ring post figure four. The ref eventually breaks it. Brett gets three chair shots in, apparently behind the referee's back. I didn't really see where Earl Hebner was there, but I'm going to trust that he was that he didn't see it.
Yeah, that's kind of clunky because like Brett, one thing he does is attention to detail very well.
Yes.
So like I feel like one thing that wouldn't have happened in a lot of Brett matches. And the way I kind of took it is sometimes the referee allows you to use a chair outside the ring. Like that's
true.
The way
not usually three times, but yes, that
I was thinking of like SummerSlam 89 with like Rude and Warrior.
There you go.
But yeah, like Brett should have like made Earl Hebner tie his shoe or something and then hit him with a chair.
Yeah, I guess if they'd have found a way, if we had known the ref wasn't looking, it would have been a little more effective if he got behind the referee's back. But then again, maybe if he's pointing and tying his shoe and then doing it, maybe that's like a little bit too nefarious, you know.
If he untied Earl Hebner's shoe and then pointed at it and made him tie his shoe and then cheated,
yeah,
that's a spot that needs to be stolen by
I feel like Jerry Lawler has done that at some point in his career.
Probably.
That's a Jerry Lawler thing to do. Yeah. So, and speaking of Jerry Lawler, he talks about how he's starting to like Brett's style. A very weird transition for Lawler to start rooting for Brett. I mean, they made it work fine, but it's still a little odd to hear him rooting for Brett. Did he root for Brett the entire time Brett was a heel, or once it became USA Canada, did Lawler sort of stick with the USA? I don't really remember how that all exactly went down.
Oh, yeah. So Lawler first started turning around on Brett when he attacked Rocky.
Right.
For
yeah.
some reason. Yes. I don't know why that was the catalyst.
I remember, I must have watched that because I do remember like Lawler specifically saying, you know, I didn't like that old Bret Hart, but this new Bret Hart, that's my Lawler, yeah. apparently. I don't know why I think Jerry Lawler talks like that, but you know, he's like talking about this Bret Hart, he's my kind of guy, you know, so.
Yeah. And I think he loved Owen so much that it kind of
it's
aligned with
that's
Owen.
That's a fair point, yeah.
And I think Lawler kind of – he mostly cheered the Hart Foundation, but I don't think he – like, I don't remember him, you know, going against them and being like, oh, they're against USA and I'm pro-USA. There wasn't any patriotism, I don't think, with Jerry Lawler. So – I don't remember it. It might have happened, but I don't remember.
Yeah,
it going.
I don't know if he was quite over the top with the Hart Foundation love after that point, or if he just kind of was. Because eventually he would. I don't know. Lawler kind of goes all over, so it's kind of hard to remember who he was rooting for or against at different points. But nevertheless, Austin attempts to rally, but Brett is able to attack the knee to cut it off. Brett then takes off Austin's knee brace, which I think Ross points out that the doctor has ordered him to wear.
yeah, that's a clever little hiding it because Austin's so tough he wouldn't wear a knee brace unless he's like
ordered by
a
doctor. Yeah, I mean that's
they wouldn't let him wrestle if he didn't wear a knee brace.
Yeah,
type of thing.
I guess it's a fairly good explanation. Brett works over the knee outside some more, holding Austin by the leg. They get back in, but Austin gets a low blow to even things up. Lawler.
Is that the point where Austin had a little bit of a comeback and then he's like backing up and Brett kicks his leg from behind him and he like just topples over?
Brett gets the low blow later. Gets like the mule kick for the low blow. Austin gets a traditional low blow. I know they were done differently because Vince even points that out later.
Which is funny because
Ross says, oh, he did the same thing. He's like, well, not quite the same thing. And Ross is like, well, it had the same result. So I like that Lawler, he brings up the point of the quote of or says that the only good loser is just a loser, which is basically the same thing that Cam Newton just said at the Super Bowl the other day. I never watched Super Bowl, but I read Twitter. I saw this on Twitter, so. There you go. Lawler agrees with Cam Newton, I think.
The funny thing I heard about that is that they like cut to Michael Irvin after that. And he said something. They like asked him, oh, how was that like speech as someone who lost a Super Bowl? Like how good was that speech as someone who did that? And he's like, I don't know. I've never lost a Super Bowl.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. I like that. So Austin tries a suplex off the mat onto the floor, but Brett reverses it into the ring. Brett locks a figure four. JR and Vince bring up Buddy Rogers, mentioning that he's the first WWF champion. Lawler says, who cares about old stuff? Which, all right. Austin breaks the hold, but he gets into it with the ref. Brett, meanwhile, uses the distraction to attack Austin's knee again.
Oh, yeah. This is the one I wanted to talk about, where he just, like, Austin's kind of, like facing away him, so Brett's in his back.
Yeah.
And he just kicks his leg from underneath them.
Right.
And
kicks Austin his leg from under his leg, as Owen would say.
Yeah, yes. Pretty much.
Yes.
It was just, like he legit tripped Austin because
yes,
there's no way
it was good.
You
yeah.
could do that. It was good.
Yeah. Henning did that one a lot. When someone would kick like his leg, he would like. I mean, Henning overdid everything. So that you know, but he that was one of his favorite ones where he sort of the guy would kick his knee and then he'd do like a little flip. So, Austin blocks the ring post figure four in with his leg and then they brawl outside. They spend a few moments not really in the crowd, like over the rail and in front of the crowd, but they don't really actually get into them. Then Austin hits a running clothesline off the ring to the floor. Brett then takes the big bump to the turnbuckle. Austin, he mounts him and punches him. He gets a cover for two, which might be the only cover in the match, which kind of surprises me.
Yeah, I think so.
Austin then tries a pile driver, but his leg gives way and Brett takes control again. So he lifts him up and and puts him down, but it's sort of like a slant, and Brett doesn't hit his head. It looks awkward, but the explanation's pretty good. So,
yeah, it's like his leg that. Gave out.
So right, exactly. It's like his leg falls. Gave out. Yeah. And then Austin's knee collapses amid an Irish whip. Austin then catches Brett, drops him chin first on the turnbuckle. He tries a stunner, but Brett grabs the ropes, then hits the mule kick for the low blow. I like that they're doing things here like counters from previous matches where, you know, Austin had landed the stunner before, Brett's kind of ready for it, and, you know, things like that. They do a nice job of callbacks to earlier matches, but doing different things from it. You know, that's obviously the show of, you know, thinking from match to match and playing off of the matches. And, you know, that I would give Brett most of the credit for being a master craftsman, even though Austin was pretty great as well.
Yeah, and it's good too, because now there's a different there's different dynamics. So now Brett has different ways to, you know, do the things. So now he's using a low blow to counter instead of at Survivor Series he would have, you know, he would have hooked the leg and hit sure. him with a Russian leg sweep or something.
Right. Yes. So
very clever.
Yeah. Brett, the knee brace has been in the ring the entire time. He sort of kicks it away as he sits at the superplex, which he hits. He goes for the sharpshooter, but Brett grabs the knee brace and he slams Brett in the head with it. Austin then locks in the sharpshooter and the crowd goes crazy. Owen and Bulldog run up and hit their apron. Austin fends them off. The refs make their way out and try to get them to the back. Austin then locks the sharpshooter again, but Bulldog is able to make his way to the – grabs a chair, makes his way into the ring, and hits Austin in the back to end it. We get a disqualification. The refs send Davey and Owen to the back. Howard Finkel announces Austin as the winner by disqualification. Brett goes to outside to the table. He takes a long time to look for something. He finally finds the ring bell. And, but as he goes to attack Austin, Austin blocks it with a chair. Then Austin repeatedly goes after Brett's knee with the chair, locks in the sharpshooter again. The officials finally pull Austin off and Brett is pulled away with the knee injury. And this is the beginning of an angle to explain Brett being out for a couple months with, injury. I guess it was probably close to 3 months, wasn't it? Was Canadian Stampede his first match back, or did he wrestle at all before that?
I feel like it was his first. He like might have done a TV tag or something, but it was his first major match back.
Sure.
I know at King of the Ring they had originally announced him and Sean
right.
with like 200 million stipulations.
Yeah, and I think the Hart Foundation were all going to be in the corners and
all Brett, handcuffed.
Yeah, and Brett would have to beat Sean in 10 minutes, or he couldn't wrestle in the United States again. So
yeah, and I feel like there was more to it too, and
yeah.
It was just weird. But yeah, that's when they faked the backstage fight and to get the match canceled to build up heat for a huge future match.
How did that go?
Yeah, interesting. We say that.
Yes.
But like this was like a classic WCW thing where the ending of the pay-per-view is completely just setting up a match on Raw.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's barely even a match on Raw, to be honest. It's the next night, they have a street fight, and immediately Austin is attacked by Owen and Bulldog again. Brett has the advantage for a while, and then, I didn't really take notes on this, so if there's anything interesting that of the brawl. But it's basically, you know, it's like a 7 minute or so match that Austin eventually takes control and does more damage to Brett's knee, locks in the sharpshooter, and then refuses to relinquish control of the sharpshooter despite the referees asking him to get off. It's unclear why they're doing this, because I mean, theoretically, if they're having a match, which I don't think the bell ever rings, so I'm not even sure it's really an official match, but theoretically, if they were having a match, the they should say that Brett submitted and Austin should win based on the precedent. But eventually early on, Shawn Michaels chases off Brett and Owen with a chair. Eventually the refs break it up. Right. If I recall correctly,
Well, Bulldog and Owen, yeah, they attack, and then Michaels comes out with a chair and he chases them away.
Well, yeah, right. I'm at the end though.
The refs
eventually pull Austin off, and then Brett and Owen or Owen and Bulldog come back and check on Brett, and they call the ambulance, and then Austin is yelled at by Gorilla Monsoon, and Gorilla sends him away, and Austin threatens to beat up Gorilla, and then he says, "Well, I'm in good mood. I'm not going to beat you up," and then sort of walks away. So
one of my favorite moments is when they're pushing Brett to the back on the stretcher,
right?
And they're like go over cords, and it bumps and jostles Brett, and Owen yells, "Watch his knee, you idiot!" it's just so funny.
So
and then the rest of the time, Bulldog's like, "Watch the cords, watch the cords. We're gonna get Austin later. We got to deal with you first," and yes, that kind of stuff. It's just awesome.
So this is the same. So Brett, because this wasn't in the YouTube video that I watched, but this is the same night where they put Brett in the ambulance, and then Austin ends up being the ambulance driver, and then he attacks Brett, right?
Yeah, essentially, but like what happens is they put Brett in, and then the camera switches to the front, and Austin's talking to the ambulance driver, and he's like, "I told you we're going straight to hell," and then he attacks him. And,
okay, there you go.
And then security pulls him apart away again, and right. Yeah, that's how that ends.
Yeah, so that's the end of that story. And Brett's on camera, you know, quite a bit. You know, he's in a wheelchair, you know, with the
yeah,
knee wrapped and all that. So he's around. They kind of continue.
They show his surgery on TV.
Oh,
they show clips of it.
I forgot about that. Yeah. And so yeah, they kind of transition to so Austin and Shawn Michaels form this unlikely tag team. They feud with Brett and Bulldog. They have a really classic Raw match where Austin and Michaels win the tag titles, but they can't coexist. And then they have a match at King of the Ring, kind of another unsatisfying ending type match.
Yeah. They had that too. The other, I think it would be the May In Your House, where Austin challenges Undertaker for the title, and the Hart Foundation's at ringside.
That's right.
And they screw Austin out of the title. Like,
right.
I forget they like, ring the bell or they attack him or something like that. But yeah, there's a weird screwy finish.
I don't think
there,
I've actually seen that one. Yeah, I'll have to check
either,
that one.
Actually.
Yeah. And that's the first Undertaker. That's probably the first Undertaker Austin match, right? That
probably,
seems kind of important too. So, so yeah, and then it, you know, all ends up building up to the 5-on-5 Canadian Stampede match, where the Hart Foundation wins. Owen pins Steve Austin, and they kind of transition, you know, the feud moves sort of away from Brett and Austin to Owen and Austin. And the plan was to eventually go back to Brett and Austin, and for Brett to put Austin over at WrestleMania 14 for the championship. To that would sort of be the culmination of that feud. Of course, Brett ends up leaving the company, and then different things happen at WrestleMania 14 against Shawn Michaels with Mike Tyson involved. So, as a Canadian, you have strong feelings about Bret Hart. You had, strong passions, you know, for him and for the Canadian international side of this. What do you think it was? Cause for me, you know, like I certainly liked the, you know, a lot of the feud, and I, you know, I enjoyed the performances and still appreciate them, and I appreciate that the dynamic of the, you know, the road home situation, the fans being crazy, you know, for the Harts 1 week and crazy for Austin the other week, and so on and so forth. But I never had personal like feelings about Canada where like I felt like, ooh, you know, those Canadians, you know, like I never really like felt like any like anger or anything bad about Canada. You know, I didn't have strong opinions about Canada, surprisingly enough. So but on the Canada side, that was obviously different. So what was it that connected with you so well?
Well, there was a whole kind of thing going on at the time where like Canada was this kind of like little brother being made fun of by Americans, and the summer of 96 is the Olympics in Atlanta, where there's all this American pride. They're, you know, going nuts like that. And Donovan Bailey comes in and wins the 100-meter dash and sets the world record. So there was kind of like this renewed, like, yeah, you know what? Canada's pretty awesome type of vibe going on in the country at the time. And like the next year, that's when Donovan Bailey faces Michael Johnson, the 200-meter American guy, at the Sky Dome. And, you know, Michael Johnson pulls out halfway through the race and fakes an injury, so Donovan Bailey beats him. So there was this kind of going on at the time, and America was super loud with their patriotism, like they always are, but it seemed to be at this kind of obnoxious level at the time, maybe because they just hosted the Olympics, and there was all this going on, and Canada, there was this feeling in the country at the time of, you know, we're awesome and we don't have to put up with being the butt of your joke. So it kind of, that's what played off so well, I think, in all this stuff.
Yeah. See, I mean, I definitely could see, you know, from the American side of, you, Brett might be right about things, but he's definitely like, he's self-righteous, you know, for, he, you know, he takes himself, you know, a little bit too seriously. He's like, he's definitely a moralist. He's definitely not, you know, not looking for a good, you know, he's, you know, I mean, no one really enjoys somebody who's, you know, a party pooper, for lack of a better term, you know. Now, were you, could you see those things, or was it just so like, were you just so enamored that those things were, you know, ignored or dismissed or what have you?
I guess you could kind of, like, I didn't understand why Americans were cheering Austin. Like, he was cheating. He was, you know, he was drinking beer and flipping people off and all this stuff. And, like that's not what a good guy does, right?
Yeah.
Like,
well, just, you know, honestly, I was a little weird. It took me a little while to kind of get that, too, because I was a little weird about that. Like, I was a little bit like, you know. Austin's...
And then there's Shawn Michaels, too, was the other guy in this. It's like, why would you cheer for this guy?
Yeah, for a while, I kind of felt like, man, you know, all these guys are kind of crappy. Like, I don't – like, I – you know, all these guys kind of seem mean, and I don't really like them. You know, where's Hulk Hogan to be nice, you know, or whatever, you know. Yeah. It took me a while to kind of get into the new template. I mean, once I sort of understood it better and you know, I liked it, and I certainly, you know, appreciate it more now. I mean, I appreciate a lot of it then, but there's aspects of it that I didn't get then that I like better now. And
I don't think this could work today. Like, I think America's not as arrogant as it was as a country. Like, it seems like America kind of understands that they have some issues, like with all the mass shootings and the fact that they actually have healthcare now. And there's kind of like things have changed to the point where America doesn't feel like this country that is ignorant of all its flaws, but doesn't care. And the fact, and they just think they're the best. Like, it doesn't, that feeling's not there anymore. And they don't kind of like it. I don't see the Americans making fun of Canadians like it used to be back in the time. Like, I think they've kind of, like, it seems to be more on even footing. Like, it doesn't seem to be there anymore like it was. Like, it might have been because I was a passionate young teenager at the time.
Sure.
But I don't think it exists anyway. Like, America's kind of changed a lot since then. Like, there's no way someone like Bernie Sanders could be doing well in 1997 in America like he is now.
That's true. So, I'm sure we'll do something soon enough to make us hate it again. So
probably,
yeah.
but yeah, I think there's been a lot of changes in the world and the way America is perceived and that kind of stuff that wouldn't make this feud possible anymore.
It is sort of funny that like Brett sort of like, even though he's Canadian, he sort of represents like a like almost like a moral majority type in America, like a little bit. I mean, you know, he represents kind of like a conservative movement, I guess, for like he's, I mean, he essentially is a conservative within the politics of wrestling. You know, he's a traditionalist. He likes the old way. He likes, you know, clear good guys and clear bad guys. He likes, you know, he likes rules to be enforced. You know, he's very much like this, where, you know, Austin is, I mean, he's, I guess he's just sort of the youth rebellion that doesn't care, even though he's not particularly young, but he's just like the, you know, he's rebel without a cause kind of thing. I think that dynamic is interesting. And I mean, it obviously works separately from the USA Canada thing, but it seems to, there definitely are, not contradictions exactly, but there are entanglements, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Yeah, there's this feud's so fascinating.
Yeah.
Like the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. I mean, it's a shame that it didn't have, I mean, I guess, I think Canadian Stampede is basically the ending of the feud. I mean, that's sort of the way I, you know, and that's a great, I mean, it's another outstanding match. I mean, there really are, like I said, the three matches, they're all incredible in their own way. They're all, you know, among the, you know, you could probably make a case for all three of them being among the, maybe the top 20 matches of in WWE history. So,
yeah. And, you know, the all-time great Royal Rumble moment, which we didn't talk about.
Right.
Too, where Austin, you know, is ruling the ring and he's sitting on the rope, kind of looking at his wristwatch. Well, his wrist, like it's a watch.
Right.
To be like, ah, who's next? And then Brett's music hits and the look on his face. So, like, that's an all-time great moment, too. And, you know, the ambulance thing with the street fight, that's a very memorable moment. So there's a lot of, you know, if you were to line up, like, the top 5 or 10 moments in this feud compared to any kind of feud in WWF history, I don't know what would compare at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's hard to say. Have you listened to the Steve Austin show where he gives commentary for the WrestleMania 13 match?
I can't remember.
Okay. I was just curious. Scott Holland told me about it. I didn't get a chance to listen to it, but that might be interesting. That would be interesting. That's definitely one I would like to check out, because I guess he does one for WrestleMania 17 as well. So, but I guess there's he talks about some things like one thing about how he responded when he sensed that Brett's arm was actually trapped during a guardrail clothesline. That kind of thing. I'd be interesting to kind of see the, you know, what he was thinking during that match and all that good stuff. But I'll save that for another time, I suppose. anything else you want to bring up before we head out of here?
I don't know. I think we covered pretty much everything. Yeah, I think we've hit all the main points for sure.
All right. Would you like to tell everyone about the Pro Wrestling Super Show and anything else that you are up to on the internet that you'd like them to see?
Yeah, I guess a few things. The Pro Wrestling Super Show, we do about a show a month now, and I'm trying to make kind of a regular schedule. Like every October, it's this type of show. But we do a variety of different things, like wrestler snapshots, where we kind of take 5 matches throughout someone's career to take a look at them at different points and look at them at their things and see how they've, you know, improved in their differences type of thing, or top 6 lists, or, you know, some fun stuff. We just did the awards nomination show with, you know, Tim Livingston's my partner on that show, but we brought on Pete from Titans of Wrestling and Chris Elner from Exile and Bad Street and Between the Sheets, you know, some 2 of the more popular shows there. And we kind of picked our nominees, and you can go to Place to Be Nation and vote on your the awards there that we nominated, and we'll reveal that next month, which kind of leads to the big thing that we've been working on for a couple of years now, and it's going to come to the conclusion at WrestleMania this year. On ProWrestlingOnly.com, the message board, we're doing the Greatest Wrestler Ever project, which is in 2006, Mark's Choice did a vote on the top 100 wrestlers of all time. And like Sight and Sound, we wanted to bring it back 10 years later. So there's been a nomination process, and that ends on March 1st. So go to the Pro Wrestling Only message board and check it out. The ballots will be due WrestleMania. So get in your list of your top 100 wrestlers of all time. And if someone's not nominated that you think should be, speak out there. And the only other thing I wanted to mention was my blog that I started recently, the Pro Wrestling, what is it called? The Pro Wrestling blog, I think. Super. What the hell is my podcast called? Pro Wrestling Super Show. So it's the Pro Wrestling Super Blog
WordPress.com.
Yeah.
Pro Wrestling Super Blog.wordpress.com.
Exactly. Yeah. Nice. And so every week there, I'm reviewing a Coliseum home video in order, checking out some minis matches and some suggested fan favorite matches to review, and doing stuff there. So that's pretty fun too. So
cool. Cool.
That's about all my stuff.
I'll have to check that out. I've seen a few tweets on that. I didn't know exactly what that project was, so I'll have to go there and check it out. Cool, Stephen. Well, this has been great. Thanks so much for being on the program. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, and I hope there's going to be more wrestling or wrestlespective shows coming up, because I missed the show. It's been gone for a while.
Well, I hope so too. So we'll see. I don't want to make any promises because I don't want to disappoint anybody. But we'll see. I can promise that there will be a WrestleMania 31 review show with K. Sawyer Paul, our annual tradition, just before WrestleMania 32. So we'll definitely have that, and we'll see what else we can get cooking. But yeah, thanks for everyone for listening. I've gotten some nice. People who missed the show telling me they missed the show, and some people have left iTunes reviews. If you that'd be a great way, if you're into the show and you want to continue showing your appreciation through iTunes or Stitcher, if you use that as well, that'd be a great way. If you just want to tweet me and tell me that you love it, if for some reason that's not available to you, if you just want to tweet me at WrestleSpective and tell me that you're into the show and ideas, or, you know, what have you, always appreciate that. I always appreciate feedback. It's what keeps you going. So, thanks everyone for listening, and we'll be back again soon.